This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Where there were some, it was a nice interview yesterday between Baskin and Phelps and J.W. Johnson, one of the partners of the Cleveland Browns, and there was a little snippet about a first-round pick in there. Looking forward to that first-round pick next year, and I went, oh, well, that's going to go against what I was talking about last week and this week. We'll play that for Mary Kay. We'll see what she has to think about it, and a possible third helmet. What's the third helmet that they could be working on? Coming up at 8:20 this morning. Jonte Porter, he's the brother of Michael Porter Jr. He's been suspended indefinitely. I think he's been banned from basketball for life, the NBA for life, right? I mean, this is like, yeah, an official ban Johnson. You're done for the rest of your life thing, right? It's not like an indefinite, like you can come back or anything. Like, that's it. He's done. And it was, I mean, the allegations here are pretty striking. It is where he gambled on basketball. According to these reports here, told gamblers about his health status before games, and that's kind of how they got tipped off. He allegedly gambled on a game that the Raptors were playing, yes, in, and gambled on them, bet on them to lose that game, which they did
they
win.
Won.
They,
yeah,
did win that game.
What's the harm?
Now, Lima, I love what you just said, though. You said it before the show because it became like a, wait a minute. Are we not paying attention to who his brother is?
Yeah, his brother is a star player,
yes,
on the best team in the league, the reigning champs. And that's just not necessarily to assume that they've been trading information. But, I mean, if you're gambling at this level, that is kind of an assumption I think most people would make. Like, hey, are you calling him? Is he giving you information? And even if it never happened, the NBA can't have the scent of this. They can't have the whiff,
yeah,
of anybody thinking, all right, he's plugged in. See, this is the thing people always miss about Pete Rose. And I the Hall of Fame, whatever. I mean, I think it's weird that his numbers aren't in there. Whatever. Whatever you want to do.
I've told you before, I think Pete Rose would rather have it. He's not in the Hall of Fame. He makes a hell of a lot
probably
of money. A hell of a lot of money being the guy who's not in the Hall of Fame. But go ahead.
Probably. But what people got to understand is Pete Rose was not just some innocent victim. Pete Rose was the manager of a team. In the clubhouse, he was making phone calls to other people around Major League Baseball to get intel. You just can't have that. That is unfair. That distorts, you know, the sanctity of the game. Like, if you can't understand how that also snowballs into, yeah, I never bet on my team. I never bet on my team. I'm down 50 grand. I never bet on my team. I'm down 2 million. I never bet on my team. I'm down 30 million. What are you going to eventually do? You're going to bet on your team. Come on, let's not play stupid here about what a degenerate gambler would do. Or just understand that, how about the games you're not betting on? I bet on all these games. I bet on all these different games. Okay, but what are you not betting on? What do you know? What outcome are you all of a sudden not betting on? Well, we're just going to take that outcome. Like, the bookies weren't stupid back then, and the sports books certainly are not stupid now. They're so sophisticated,
yeah,
that any edge that can be derived out of this, they're going to take advantage.
Hell, look how they caught that college baseball coach last year at Alabama, for
in
crying out loud.
In record time.
Yes.
Dude,
yes,
they're not messing around. So if anything, I keep coming back to this, and I think you're in agreement here.
We'll see.
Because we have talked about this a little bit when these various stories came up. What was the college basketball team this year? Was it Temple?
Yes. Yep.
Guys,
point-shaving allegations.
They're catching them so fast because the levels of sophistication, the computers are catching them, not even the people. The computers are catching the irregularities so fast that having the gambling and the partnership with the gambling for all of these teams and these leagues, It's actually, in many ways, protecting you, the gambler, more than anything else.
Explain a little further.
It's making sure.
I think I'm with you. I just want to make sure I am.
They are catching any of the irregularities earlier than ever before because the microscope is on. They are watching all of this activity closer than ever before. So if guys are messing around, if you think, like Tim Donaghy, all that stuff, I'm telling you, they did eventually catch him. Had Tim Donaghy been operating now, they would have caught him so much faster.
Because they're partners?
Because they're partners. They would have. They absolutely 100% would have. So well, You should feel better about your bets today. I know it's because you're a shill for the gaming world. I'm just saying it makes sense. Now that the leagues are in bed with it, now that Congress is involved, like they want to make sure so that everybody gets their money that it's on the up and up. Because the minute you, as a fan, as a consumer, don't believe it's on the up and up, you're not only not going to bet, you're not going to watch the games. You're going to be so put off. No. They can't afford to have that happen.
Well, only the hardest of gamblers would continue for whatever reason. Yeah. I mean, people try to bet on wrestling, pro wrestling results, for crying out loud. I think you're right in a lot of ways. There's a lot of stuff where when people said, I thought when you got into bed with these entities, this was going to be a problem. And my thought was, Anthony, and I don't know if you're going to agree with this, I go, well, we all have rules at work. Owen had made the point earlier. He goes, well, there's certainly alcohol companies that advertise in TV and radio. Doesn't mean you're allowed to come in here soused, which Owen was right about that. And that means I'm not allowed to go out there and gamble. If I'm a player, I can't gamble on my sport, which, by the way, I don't think they say anything about table games. And we know we have a casino here, and I think some of the stories about some of the NBA players coming here and enjoying Jack Casino is a bit legendary. Are they not with certain NBA players?
Yep.
There's some really wild tales being told about some of the money that they've put down since we opened up that casino there. I just think that it's bad business, but it's also bad business for the player to put themselves into that type of problem. If you want to finish your career and go ahead and do it, fine. But if you do it while you're playing, hey, man, like, you got what's coming to you. And I think that these have to be strong, stringent rules of lifetime banishment to dissuade anybody else from doing it. And I do think you're right. Before, when gambling was this thing that they tried to avoid at all cost, I think there was less chances of guys being caught than there are now, where obviously the computer sophistication where they track every single bet you make, because they're always trying to find anybody trying to encrypt anything that would possibly be a burden on any one of these games or impugn the dignity of any one of these games. I think now that they are official partners, it may help to try to legitimize what people have been questioning for a long time. Not that all of a sudden these guys, there are always going to be people who are corruptible. We are a human species. There's always going to be that possibility with referees, with coaches, with players. But it is also a thought of, hey, man, we're going to have less of that because there's going to be a very stiff penalty, lifetime banishment, maybe even charges in some cases, if you can prove it, of somebody who's doing this.
I also wonder about this. Do you think there's any chance that the teams themselves, more specifically, the teammates would self-police something like this? Because I would imagine, like, let's say LeBron, let's go to the highest level. If I'm LeBron and I caught even the slightest whiff of a rumor about a teammate gambling on the NBA, I am out on that teammate. I'm throwing him under the bus. I'm getting him out of that locker room. I cannot have that, because if he's willing to do that, what else is that teammate willing to do when it comes to privileged information within that locker room, not just on sports? Everything else that the players know about each other, their teammates, their habits. I just think there's going to be so much policing on this that even happens at that level, on the ground level.
I think LeBron's a different animal
because you said
the highest level because he, there's no doubt about it. LeBron has a vested interest in the NBA. He's a steward of the game. He takes it very seriously.
And his legacy.
I think he's the guy who gets it. That's why I put Caitlin Clark, like, you have an obligation to your sport to perform and do these duties. And I think LeBron has taken that very seriously and has an obligation to it. But I think that for a lot of guys, I mean, I don't know, Tone, snitches and the whole thing and telling on your teammates, like, that's a very, very hard thing to do. I think LeBron,
but in this case,
guys in the players union who are the top brass, maybe they would feel differently, but I do think that a lot of guys might
in this case
try to dissuade him.
That's what they might be thinking he's doing. A teammate that's involved in wagers is capable of anything. They're the snitches. They're the ones that are getting the information out to not just bookies, but to the public in general. What else might they be, you know, getting out there?
Blackmailing.
And so I'm saying, I truly believe this. The league, I mean, they had to suspend him and they had to get rid of him. And he'll have his day in, not court, but whatever, behind the scenes. He'll have a lawyer and they'll go through all this. He's protected by the union. I don't think they had to do anything, though, in the end. Like, I don't think another team would pick this guy up. Especially
limited
player.
No.
Like the lifetime ban was already happening.
Even if the lifetime ban
the NBA
is off.
Was involved.
Because he's a fill-in guy. He's a end of the bench guy anyway.
Yes.
So it's not like his talent supersedes something like this. So if you're the end of the bench guy anyway, I mean, gosh, we see it in everything. No, you're just not worth the problem and we're not gonna bring you into the NBA. 216-474-0092. Michael in Cleveland. Yellow.
I have to ask you guys, can you just imagine the cruel irony of all of us sitting in our cars driving, listening to a very intelligent, sophisticated conversation about all of the checks and balances and algorithms and people watching every single bet that every single person makes. And last night I watched the Guardians game, and they can't call balls and strikes.
Well, you saw the buck call that was made, which I didn't know we called buck in 2024 anymore.
Well, how about this one? Every time the ball is over the plate, the catcher doesn't move his glove. Every time the catcher's got to move his glove 3 feet and hold it there, it's a ball. But they still call half of those strikes.
Michael, I call it exquisite framing.
There have been, Michael, I said this yesterday or a couple of days ago, like there has to be, it's got to be way up. Yeah. The influence of framing has been through the roof, it seems, this year. And I thought,
I just asked
the question, and it seems that a lot of people agree with me. Like, man, I'm seeing a lot more framed strikes than I've ever seen in my life. Michael, thank you very much for the call and the point. I've seen a lot more framed strikes already in 3 weeks of baseball than I think I've seen over the last 3 years in full seasons of baseball.
Yeah.
Now I got to tell you this, though.
I have a theory on that, but go ahead.
Okay, but for an umpire, yeah, you have a very strong union, as we see with Angel Hernandez. You have an extremely strong union. However, it's exactly what you just said. You impugn your dignity and cut off everything because you would be banned from the sport. You'd be banned from minor league baseball. I don't think a high school would take you for that. A high school outfit would take you for that just to make money on your bets. If you have that type of a problem, maybe, but I don't think it would go that way.
Yeah, just quickly, my theory is, you know, when we were watching baseball growing up, you had cameras that are askew from center field that were way off. So you're always like, you know, that didn't look like a strike, but I can't tell from that vantage point. Now you have immediately on your phone the trackers, the strike zone. Every regional baseball network has the digital strike zone. Like, so there's no debating. Like, you know, oh, that was a strike, clearly. Like, that has nothing to do with the camera, or maybe the umpire was sitting in the wrong side of the catcher. Now you know immediately, and so you're equipped with that knowledge. You're more prone to go after the umpire.
That's true. J.C. Sheldon going to join us 9:20 this morning. Former Ohio State women's basketball guard, new Dallas wing. She's about to embark on her WNBA career. Up next, you guys miss first-round picks? Apparently the Browns do too. Mary Kay Cabot going to join us next on The Fan. I want to ask Mary Kay Cabot, who joins us right now, she does every Thursday at 8:20 on a Thursday morning, about the first-round pick. Mary Kay, I think we asked you last week if you missed first-round picks. Do you think the Browns, as JW says, miss first-round picks?
Well, I think they've done a nice job of trying to find players in other ways. Some of Andrew Berry's best acquisitions over these past 3 years have come in trades. So essentially, with Jerry Jeudy, they were able to land a first-round player with a nominal amount of draft capital. So I think if you look at it that way, then it eases the pain a little bit. They added Amari Cooper for a fifth-round pick a couple of years ago. So they've done things to make up for the fact that they haven't had these first-round picks, and I think they've done a really good job of it.
Mary Kay, like, I should clarify, too, before Tone takes off and asks you the next question. Like, look, Anthony and I have had vigorous debates about Micah Parsons or Brandon Ayuk or anything like that. I understand that salary caps come into play, other teams and what they could offer as far as a trade come into play. I mean, these are pie-in-the-sky off-season arguments. A first-round pick matters a whole bunch. If there was a way that they could get one of these other premier players and they could just do it for giving up a first-round pick next year and go four straight years without a first-round pick, would the Browns, would they hesitate to do it?
I think that Andrew is very aggressive and that he will do anything that he thinks will help the team. If they see that there is that player out there and that they can get him just by trading up into the first round, then he probably would at least consider doing it. I don't see it happening. I think they can be patient. I think this roster that they have right now is stocked well enough to get them to a championship, so I don't think they have to do it. I think they can find other pieces or fill holes in other ways, so I really don't see them doing it, but I would never put anything past Andrew. He's an aggressive drafter. He's an aggressive trader, and he'll do whatever it takes.
Mary Kay with us. The big news, obviously, from the week, at least I thought, and I looked at it as a hugely positive story, was Deshaun Watson. Seems like not only is he on schedule, that he's been throwing like crazy. Talked about whether or not there were limitations. And the longer he talked, though, some people got a little more confused on where he is and whether or not he's ahead of schedule. I looked at it all as a positive. What did you take away?
Well, my biggest takeaway from the Deshaun interview was the fact that he now believes it's possible, or has been told it's possible, he could have fractured the shoulder all the way back in week 3 in the Titans game. And if that's true, if there was something in there going on more than the strained rotator cuff, I think it informs everything that happened afterwards. And I think a lot of people thought Deshaun doesn't have it anymore. Deshaun's washed up. Deshaun is horrible. And if he was trying to play on a badly damaged shoulder that whole time, I think it does kind of let people understand and know that this was not the Deshaun that they're going to see if he's healthy this year. The other thing that I took away from that is the fact that they did have to repair the labrum as well. And that's a little bit different than just having to repair the bone. So I haven't figured out yet whether or not you always have to repair the labrum when you repair a displaced fracture of the glenoid bone, or if that was something that they also just had to do. So I do think that he might need a little bit of time this offseason in OTAs, in mini camp, to ramp up, to take it easy, and to not overdo it. So I don't think that it was a confusing press conference, but I do think he shed some light on the entire shoulder situation and maybe gave us some details that we really didn't know before.
Well, you talked about the details we didn't know before, and I don't think it needs to be a blame game situation for last year. Sometimes, unfortunately, injuries, the way they manifest, the way the imaging can be difficult, and sometimes, unfortunately, people just get it wrong. What happened last year? Did you get clarity on the specifics to when he got injured, what the Browns knew, when they knew it, how he went out there for that Colts game, and so forth?
No, there is no real clarity on that, and I don't know if there ever really will be, because as Deshaun stated, he doesn't know exactly when he fractured the shoulder, and his surgeon doesn't know exactly when he fractured the shoulder. What we do know is that his surgeon, Dr. Neil Eletresh, was amazed that he was able to go out and play the Cardinals game the week before the Ravens game.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you.
Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
With the shoulder injury. So that led me or leads me to believe that it was fractured for that game too. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and it doesn't mean that anybody did anything wrong. I mean, the Browns have one of the best medical staffs in the entire NFL, in the world, really. And so it doesn't mean that anyone did anything wrong. These are difficult injuries. Perhaps you could have something inside of a shoulder that you don't detect or you don't see. I don't know exactly what happened. We'll probably get a little bit more clarity today from Andrew Berry, and I'm sure that he will make it known that the Browns medical staff obviously did everything right and did everything that they possibly could to make sure that their $230 million investment was on the field when he should be.
Well, it does say to me, and hey, the show's been critical, but the show also tries to be fair to everybody involved, including the Browns quarterback. And there's been people who go, well, he's got his money, he doesn't care anymore. I go, wait a minute. If he actually fractured this thing in the game against Tennessee, well, that means he definitely forced his way back on the field when it was too soon against Indianapolis, and then he definitely forced his way back on the field when it was too soon against Arizona. So I could say that this is a guy who's desperate to go out there and prove himself and get back on the field.
Well, he didn't know that he had a fractured shoulder.
Clearly, he knew he was injured, though. I mean, if he's hearing a clicking, he knows things ain't good.
He didn't know. He didn't hear the clicking until the Baltimore game. That's when Yeah, he did not hear the clicking part until the Baltimore game. So it could have been a situation where there was something barely perceptible in there, something that might not be caught on a scan or whatever, or maybe a weakness of something, and then one thing led to another, and then by the time he played the Baltimore game, it just kind of blew. So nobody really knows for sure exactly when the fracture took place, but at least he's saying that it's possible that it could have happened on that big hit at the end of the run in week three, and I think that would make some of his subsequent performance make a little bit more sense.
That's fair. Mary Kay joining us on the show. Why the confusion then with some of our brethren in the media about whether or not he's going to be ready to go for week one? I assumed, I mean, they asked him several times. Now I know he's been a guy who's wanted to get on the field before. I assume he's going to be ready for week one.
Well, nothing has changed in that regard. He told us at the opening of his restaurant last week that he would absolutely be ready for week one. I asked him what makes him so confident about that, and he gave some good answers about that, including just what his medical staff is telling him and how the rehab is going and how hard he's working. So I don't think that's changed. I think the only uncertainty right now is when are they going to let him practice full strength with the team? Are they going to let him play in a preseason game, which he probably shouldn't do that, really. But are they going to let him practice, you know, in minicamp? And that might be a no. And his surgeon is going to have a large say in this matter. The hard part is there is no precedent. There is no NFL comp for this. So you can't say, oh, yeah, these three guys came back in June minicamp and then they were fine for the start of the season. He's at this point still on track to start the season.
Mary Kay, we are officially 1 week out from the NFL draft. And obviously, as we started talking to you and hearing from JW yesterday, we probably have never talked less NFL draft than we have the last few years because of the Watson deal. But I know that you're doing your job and you are dialed in. Where do you think position-wise the Browns are going to go in the second round? Do you think there's a chance for, I've heard trade up, I've heard trade down. What's in play here?
Well, you'll hear all of those things today when we talk to Andrew Berry at 10 a.m. for his pre-draft press conference. I'm sure he'll say he's open to anything, and he's working the phones right now. So they will be open to a trade up, a trade back, maybe a trade back. I would think more so they want to hang on to the highest pick that they can and get the best player that they can. As far as a position, I don't think they do it that way. I really don't. I don't think they target a position. I think it's a deep wide receiver draft, so they're looking at a lot of receivers, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them go receiver there. But we've learned with Andrew Berry's previous drafts that he will definitely take that best available player, even if he's stocked at a position.
The reason I bring up the trade down part of this, and we've gotten into some arguments, I'd say, on this show about the tack to take. I've always thought that it's time for the Browns to start getting more and more draft picks. More young, cheap players are going to be the way to make sure to sustain a window rather than just keep plucking from free agency. But we have these debates because, like you said, he's been aggressive, Andrew Berry. They want to keep bringing in the talented players, and obviously the known talented players are the free agents. But I just wonder if going into a season now, I think they, what, just got their fifth pick with that seventh-round trade, that you're looking at the Ravens. The Ravens routinely have double-digit draft picks, and that's been part of their successful model.
Well, I think they've done a good job of adding players in other ways as undrafted free agents, street free agents. I think they do a nice job of acquiring young players. This is a pretty deep roster. But right now, when you look at it, there's not a lot of room. There are not a bunch of open jobs for young guys. So it's really a developmental thing in terms of the draft right now. They're not looking for their number two receiver at this moment. They have that guy. So I think they have a good strategy the way that they're going about it, and they always seem to find a lot of good young players to add to the team, even if they don't come through the draft.
What do you think of Whiteface Mess?
I like him. I don't get really caught up too much in the whole uniform and face mask issue, but I do like them. They are a nice, clean, bright look, and they're associated with success. So let's go for it.
What color would you want a third helmet to be?
Well, I was kidding around yesterday on a podcast about this, and I said, why not go gold? Let's do something completely different. We've already seen white. We've already
gold?
Seen the orange. I wouldn't like brown. I'm mostly joking, but I mean, they already have white and orange, so I don't know what else you could really do.
Mary Kay, we thank you very much for your time and your candor. You're wonderful. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Mary Kay Cabot on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We got J.C. Sheldon, former Ohio State women's basketball guard, and a new Dallas wing in the WNBA. She's going to join us at 9:20 this morning. Coming up next, we just heard from Mary Kay about it. I want to hear from J.W. Johnson from yesterday on Baskin and Phelps, because, folks, the good old days are back. Here in Cleveland, Ohio, Ken Carman, Anthony Lima, live on The Fan. What do you want as a third helmet, Tom?
The third helmet.
I can't think
helmet.
Of anything that would be possible other than... there's definitely been fans who got in on this. The only thing I can think of is a white helmet with a logo. You can't have a brown helmet, can you?
Well, that's not a third helmet, though. That's just... the second helmet with a sticker on it.
If it has a logo, it's a third helmet.
Wait, I'm confused. You guys have confused me. I don't understand the intricacies of that. Why wouldn't that be a third helmet?
Because it's just a white helmet.
I'm not confusing you on anything. You want a whole different color if it's a third helmet.
Well, that would
be
a third helmet.
No, it would just be – you could
add
a logo to it.
If you line them up in the locker, there would be the orange helmet, the white helmet, and then that week they would just slap a sticker on the side. That'd be two helmets.
Would numbers on the side count?
Nope.
I think a logo.
Second helmet.
No,
like,
I think a logo.
They did
the,
it with the orange back when you were only allowed one helmet. Sometimes they'd put stickers on.
I remember. But yeah, I
would just say that we have had so many different looks around the NFL the last few years. Like, I'm amazed the Jets are already past 5 years. They're not changing their uniforms kind of back to what they were, right?
Were they past 5 years?
It has to be
like
5 years.
They basically did what the Browns did. They changed their uniforms,
so,
and there was a lot of people didn't like it, and they went right back to the old one.
I think what we're finding is, with all the changes in uniforms and the variations, and I know people were worried about the Oregonization. That's a word.
That is a word. That's not the word.
Oregonization.
Oregonizing.
Of the NFL. Like, this is going to tarnish the NFL. This is going to tarnish what this league stands for, conservative nature, and it hasn't impacted anything. We love the game more than we've ever loved it. It doesn't matter what the uniforms are. I actually think it'd be cool for the Browns to trot out a helmet with a logo. I don't think that would ruin Browns fandom. I don't think that would...
I'd rather not.
Well, let me finish.
Not.
I don't think
I don't
it would
to.
Mean that the team needs to change who they are, their identity. I think it would just be cool if one game a year they had a helmet on a logo.
I think everybody a logo on a helmet. Monday through Saturday would be up in arms, and then on Sunday they go, "Oh, there's our team."
Yeah,
we try.
There's
to
the guys that we cheer for. I don't care.
I'm not
what
talking
they're wearing.
About permanence.
Yeah, no. Nope.
I'm not talking about permanence because you know, as cool as we think our generic or our helmets and you know uniforms that are no frills, as cool as we think it is, there's a lot of people that think it's awful around the league. Like they're like. They don't come up often as best uniforms, best logos, best colors. I think it'd be cool to just have one game a year where you actually have a logo like every other team in the NFL. I don't think that ruins what how unique it is to be a Cleveland Browns fan.
Nope. We tried to be creative once.
Yeah, but that's for a whole season. That was what was terrible about it.
Are you going to let me finish this time, or are you just going to cut me off?
Yeah, we're just talking one game here.
I don't think we're talking at all. I think you're talking at me right now. 216-474-0092. Chuck in Cleveland, you're first up on the Fan.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, listen, why don't they have the little brownie elf on the helmets just for the home opener?
I say no.
I'd love it.
Come on,
let's
kid.
Go. Let's do it. He's a fuddy-duddy.
No.
Not excited about the Cavs. Not excited about the Browns shaking things up.
Go to hell. I'm excited about the Cavs.
What excites Ken these days other than
a
dead mallard on his front yard?
It wasn't a mallard. A mallard is a male duck. This was the other type of duck.
Oh, you went and checked?
You can tell the mallard duck has a green head.
Turn your head and cough, mallard.
The dog head? The dog's not part of the Browns' history.
Put a duck on the helmet.
Chuck, no one's going to let me make the point here that I've been trying to make for the last 5 minutes. Thank you for the call. As we tried to get creative one time, and these two guys who work for Nike, who've never been
from
to
New
Cleveland,
York City.
Who are from New York, we captured the essence of Cleveland. And they just assumed us small-town rubes would buy whatever they were selling, and they marched out those jerseys, and they were not great. And they just sat there and thought, Cleveland cares about tradition, so we'll leave the helmet basically the same way. We'll make a tweak here and there, and we are just going to throw words and patterns at a jersey, and here you go. And we didn't like it. We've tried to be creative about it before, and every time we try to be overly creative, it doesn't go well. Don't put a logo on the helmet. You know how much I love Brownie the Elf. You know I love that logo. You know I think it's great. I offered to get a tattoo if they – what was it if they went to the Super Bowl?
Well, you started identifying that as him at some point.
Yes. I'm according to Lime, I'm Brownie the Elf about how positive I am about the Cleveland Browns.
It's a big elf.
However – yes, it was a very big elf. However, no. Don't put him on the side of the helmet. No. Absolutely not.
I'm looking at the Brownie Elf right now. Now, I realize we've had multiple or various Brownie the Elves.
There's a couple different –
We actually
He's doing
are,
different things. It's always the same elf.
For as much as we say we're radical about certain things, and I understand where you're going with that, we actually are, as a society, pretty conservative about our uniforms. We really are. You remember the futuristic Indians uniforms back in the day? They came out with the futuristic uniforms of the 90s. You don't remember those, Anthony?
With
Someone will tweet them at
no
you.
Sleeves?
No, it was not. No, they were futuristic jerseys. And it was a mess. And it like had like Indians and like big letters on the side of the like where
oh,
the chest
yeah.
is like right over your heart, and it was weird, man. And they were baggy.
They were hypercolor.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, you remember those?
Yes.
Now, like, you tried that. We constantly complain about the Cavs and their umpteen different jerseys, to the point Dan Gilbert put out a tweet with all these different types of jerseys as a gag, and people thought he was serious because we have all those different jerseys now. Just let's not get too crazy with it. You want to put some numbers on it as an alternate helmet? Go ahead and do it. Guys, I love the Brown of the Elf. No.
Well, we're getting Jeff Swoboni on X, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. He has a Brown of the Elf on the brown helmet.
That looks like a black helmet.
That just doesn't work.
That's a black helmet with an orange face mask.
So it would have to be on an orange or white helmet, right? There's no way that would work on a brown helmet.
I mean, I kind of like that.
Oh, you do?
No. Not in an actual game. Glenn in Shaker Heights. Hello.
Hey, what is our logo? It's
a
helmet.
Our logo is a helmet.
So put a picture of a helmet on the side of the helmet, and that picture of the helmet can also have a picture of a helmet on the side of the helmet.
Now, what do you do after that?
All
all the way.
It's and then you take it and you just kick it right off the air.
Owen!
It's inception.
Owen!
You're at the nexus of the universe.
Owen!
It's football.
That does sound like an Onion article. Or for the other side, that sounds like a Babylon Bee article.
Apparently.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Did you notice what our call box did, by the way? Apparently, like, three other people had the same idea because they all dropped at the same time.
Like, oh, man.
I beat me to it.
I'm seeing the circle crest that they had with Brownie the Elf in the middle of it. I think that could be a logo on this. I get, Ken, you're not going to be into this at all. But for anybody that would be open to this, I think if you did that circle with Cleveland Browns and the Brownie the Elf in the middle.
Do the script Cleveland on the side.
That's a logo. Cleveland. Like the Giants. Like they would, they've gone from New York. They've
but vacillated. Do it as we've done with it. I mean, they have how many of those up around town to take pictures?
How would that look, Kenny? Could I interest you?
I don't know. I got a bunch of people trying to correct me on Mallard Ducks here. I'm very distracted again.
There we
continue.
Go.
Would you be interested, like
Duck
Owen
Dynasty
said,
in the morning,
doing what the Giants have done over time? They
what?
Were using either the word
Giants.
Continue to tell everybody Daniel Jones can play quarterback. What? He's a glorified running back. I'm sorry. I'm paying attention now. I'm sorry. That's my fault. What? You want me to put a CLE in cursive on the side?
I'm wondering what that would look. What about Browns? The Giants had the Giants written on the side of their
no,
helmet.
No, we don't need Browns on the side of the helmet. Everybody knows what they're called. Giants, you know the history why they put Giants on the side of the helmet? It's because when they moved to Jersey, it was like this big thing. Like Ed Koch wasn't going to have a parade for him or anything. So as like a bleep you to the mayor, they put Giants on the side of the helmet instead of the NY. I mean, Andy's grew up a Giants fan. If he wants to correct me on it, maybe I'm a little bit wrong on that or maybe all the way wrong. But I think that that's how it kind of went.
Has CLE become something big enough in this
Browns
town that that could
to
be a
Brooke
logo?
Park and then
Now we're getting some.
Yeah. Now there's a little gas in the oven. 216-474-0092. All these people are calling with different Browns helmets. All right, fine. I'll take you guys. And there's a lot of awkward moments on the way to something being normal. J.C. Sheldon going to join us at 9:20 on The Fan, everybody.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.